Grimbo. This is the Outside Gate with Steve Hall on the L4 Media Network, where we usually talk US moto and anywhere the conversation goes. Today we'll be talking about something a little different. So all the way from Spain, we have arguably the most skillful motorcycle rider in the world. Graham Jarvis, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you very much for joining us. So I was just telling Graham, I've got a bit of a story about first time I knew who Graham was. So we have a hard enduro where I live or reasonably close called Wildwood Rock. And I went down to have a look at the second year it ran. So the first year it was just all the guys from, I think, you know, around the state sort of entered it, and a few you know, good Aussies and that, and a young fella called Mitch Harper won it. And for the second year, it really took off, and all the biggest names in Aussie off-road were there. So we're talking like probably ones even international people know. So Toby Price was there at the height of his Australian off-road domination. Sort of the guy that was probably Toby's mentor, Ben Grabham, was there. Glenn Carney was there, who was not long just like back from like being a podium guy in GNCCs. And Stefan Merriman was there, and just a year out from being a world enduro champion. So it was a really stacked field. Matty Phillips, who's a multiple world enduro champion after that, all there. Anyway, race gets going, and it's really good, and it's pretty obvious pretty soon this is different stuff. I remember seeing Toby and Ben both stuck in a mud section helping pull each other's bikes out. We're like, well, these are like the best guys in the country, but they're more desert racing guys. Anyway, as the race goes on, we're looking at the results, and there's this guy who nobody knows in Australia, and he's just absolutely putting it to all the best guys in Australia. And I remember vividly there was a crowd section there going over the tractor tires, and this guy lapped Stefan Merriman, who was a world champion enduro, lapped Stefan Merriman in front of the crowd over these tires. And the crowd, everyone in the crowd's going, who's this guy? Who is this guy? And there was you know, everyone's got their phones out looking up, you know, checking the results, looking up Graham Jarvis. And then everyone's going, oh, right. And we're seeing all your sheet of what you've won in Europe and the hard enduro and all that sort of thing. And it was absolutely amazing. And I remember that day you won by so far. The only person that was even vaguely close, maybe even on the same lap, was Matty Phillips. And basically the whole crowd was just like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, so, and that was a real introduction of hard enduro to Australia. I think that day everybody just sort of thought, shit, this is different. You know, I can remember Glenn Kearney, who was just come from the GNCCs. I remember him laying down, struggling to pick his bike up in this like rock section. And I was just like, dude, he looks like me on the weekend. And this guy is a professional, you know. So that was amazing. And after that, we all knew who you were. And I reckon everyone in that crowd probably started watching Erzberg and watching all the hard enduro stuff right from then on. And then I think you came back the next year and won it again. So, yeah, that was really cool. I don't know if you remember that at all, but yeah, that was my introduction to hard enduro and to being a fan of you.
Yeah, that's it. It's going back a few years, but it was like the start of hard enduro, you know, the progress, and then it kind of took off really quickly. Yeah, but all the races, like Erzberg, when I first went, there was only like Naito there, you know, one or two. It wasn't getting so much publicity, and then within 5-6 years, it's just gone crazy, and it keeps growing now. So, yeah, it's good. Obviously, more races around the world as well. Lots of different countries, you know, just, you know, all the top guys traveling around doing different races. Indonesia, Brazil, it's all massive following, a lot of riders. And obviously in Australia, I think it's growing still there as well.
It is, yeah. You know, I think probably one thing with Australia is just the actual availability of terrain that is that challenging is probably the tough thing in Australia. You know, for a lot of parts of Australia, you can't hardly find anywhere that's that challenging to ride. You know, the hills aren't that big, the things aren't that hard. You know, a lot of dudes, you know, they'll find quarries and just find sort of some man-made things to learn the skills, especially for hills and that sort of thing. But
it's relative to the level of riding. So obviously, different levels, what's hard, technical for one rider, you know, the hard in the local races, they don't need to be so extreme. Yeah. And I don't think they should be, you know, it should be, you know, kind of rideable, or you can push through if you get it right. So yeah, it doesn't need to be so difficult to make it difficult. But like the Wildwood, you know, it wasn't actually a difficult race at the time.
it was probably a breeze for you.
It was a relatively fast race, but obviously it was new to a lot of riders there at that stage. But obviously everyone's got better at the level, everybody's gone up now, so you know, it gets a little bit tougher.
Yeah, for sure. A lot older. All right, Graham, I'd love to know a little bit about your, like, how it all started for you. So question I always ask is, when did the bug bite for motorcycles? When were you like, wow, I love these things, this is what I want to do? Like, how old?
I was 10 years old. You know, I saw people near my house riding, wanted to give it a go. My parents were never into trials or anything. So I did trials for 20 years, from 10 years old to 30, and then got to number 4 in the world. But you know, I was kind of going down the results. Tony Bow came along, I kind of saw him, and then decided it's time to give up trials. And then bit of a transition, you know, hard enduro wasn't a career move. You know, there's just a few races, but I enjoyed doing the local stuff as well, like 2.5 hour races. So get a bit of speed up. It was some new skills, but a lot of the skills just transitioned from trials, you know, the technical stuff. But, you know, anything a bit faster, like ruts and sand, I had to learn a little bit. But, you know, most of it came pretty naturally. And then it just went from there. And then, the social media and YouTube came around. I think that all helped. You know, I did some videos, so that kind of spread the word of what I was doing, and kind of it was all new then, so got a lot of followers, and then won a few races since then.
You certainly have. Yeah, man. So I'm a big fan. So your trials, though, like, I was looking up your results, always, you know, do a results check for all any guests and that sort of thing. I knew you were very successful, but yeah, you know British champion 5 times, I'm not sure exactly what the Scottish 6-day trial is, but it sounds pretty heavy duty, and you've won that 4 times. So,
yeah, I always say the traditional trials were more like enduro, because, you know, the Scottish 6 days, for example, was only 30 sections, but we were doing 100 miles or kilometers or whatever you want in per day. So there was a lot of between stuff over the moorland. It was, you had to stick to a time. So, and bikes were heavier as well. So then the style of riding was more non-stop. So now the trials have changed. But before then, you know, bikes being heavier, it did relate a little bit more to it, the enduro skills.
Yeah. When you say they were heavier, so was that like that just bigger, I guess those distances, they always had bigger tanks and that sort of thing?
They just refine them now. They're like 60 something. Okay. Back then, well, I was on a Scorpio and Aprilia. They were the heaviest bike. It was like 83 kilos, the one I was on. So, you know, if you think enduro bikes around 100 or whatever, but you know, it was just a different style. So it kind of probably from them days was easier to transition as well. And then there's another trial called the Scott Trial, which is not so famous as Scottish 6 days, but the Scott Trial is more like an enduro, so you don't stop, walk the sections. It's 80 miles, 80 sections, and then it's time added to the observation. So, you know, that was good training as well, because that was known to be the toughest trial, and it's just basically more like an enduro. So all of that was good preparation for an enduro career. But even now, I wish I'd transitioned earlier. It's easy to say, but you know, when I started to go downhill in trials, it's better just to I wish I'd done some faster enduro races as well, like to get more speed if I was a bit younger. But I just kind of learned just enough speed that I can get by in hard enduro.
Yeah, that's what you need, the speed to get on that front row at Erzberg is when the speed comes in, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Every race is different, isn't it? Like the Erzberg, you've got the prologue's flat out, so you need a little bit of fast style to get on the front row, which is sometimes not easy.
Yeah, yeah. Seems like just about all the top guys in hard enduro have started out as trials riders, yeah? Probably except for Wade. I think Wade didn't. Is that right?
Yeah, that's it. All the, you know, like Johnny Walker and stuff and Billy, you know, actually, I actually taught some of them as kids. Johnny, I was obviously a lot older, so I was his dad paid me to teach him trials. And
Gomez,
one time in Spain, I don't remember, but they say when Gomez and Mario were kids, I did a training school with them.
Cool, so, and all these guys end up being your rivals, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Especially Johnny, you know, I remember a good run there, it was either you or Johnny was going to win. So yeah,
that's it. Yeah, it's been a few years, but yeah, at one point it was kind of I had it easy for a few years, and then Johnny came along. It was just me and him, and then obviously now there's, you know, 10 riders that are all professional, getting better every year.
Yep, yep. Do you remember what's your memories of your first Erzberg?
Yeah, I was on a 450 Sherco.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, probably not many people remember that because there wasn't as many videos and everything either. So, yeah, 450. So, and then, but it was an easier track and less competition. But I came fourth. So, but I got on the front row. I was like 50th. So I just scraped on the front row. And then the first turn, I remember I was last off the line and I came in a bit hot, and then I smashed into somebody, put a hole in the casing, the oil was leaking out, but got to the finish. So that was my main memory. So
would that have been like who won that year? Would that have been like when Nida was winning or Taddy?
Yeah, Nida won that year. That was the year before Taddy came along. So Nida was winning it easy, and then the year after I actually missed because I was still doing trials. It clashed with a British trial championship, and I was winning that, so I missed it. And that was the year Taddy came along, he got the factory ride, and then yeah, could have been me. I had to persevere for a bit longer,
yeah, cool. So, your first like factory ride was, I guess, was KTM group, but on the Husaberg, you're on the Husaberg for a start, weren't you?
Yeah, that's it. I did persevered with Sherco for, you know, obviously won some races as well, but you know, there wasn't factory rides anyway. And then an Italian team based around Golden Tire took me on, so that was the first kind of professional team. But yeah, that was really good, and we won a lot of races with them guys. That was first with the Sherco, and then Husaberg kind of stepped in as well. It was a joint effort from the factory. Husaberg was just a small part of KTM then. And then that year I switched to the two stroke. So I'd been on four stroke up until then. And then that was a kind of another step forwards, up to my level with that. And then transitioned to Husaberg factory, and then eventually switched to Husqvarna. The name switched, obviously.
Yeah, the Husaberg just sort of morphed into the new Husqvarna, didn't it, basically? Yeah.
And then the factory started coming to the races as well. Before, they weren't really bothered and obviously realised the publicity. Even now there's not so many factories really supporting it, but...
I think they're missing out. I think they're really missing, you know, I know just from the the sales of like 300 two-strokes basically is massive worldwide, you know, and the sport just is growing and growing, and there's, you know, only a handful of manufacturers into it. I think some of these Japanese manufacturers are really missing out by not getting around that. But yeah, they're pretty stubborn though, I think, and pretty set in their ways. It's just got to be motocross, got to be four stroke, that sort of thing. But yeah, I race off-road events every now and again, you know, once a year or something, and I just race them on a motocross bike. But the last one I went to, it was like, wow, like there's the 300 two-strokes just everywhere, you know. And
there's been a transition. It's the bike to have, so probably affect the sports, affected the bike sales, but it's good for, it's probably sell a lot of spare parts as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's one thing about hard enduro, man, is it's hard on the bike. You know, they're going to sell a lot more. Yeah, you sell a hard enduro bike to a guy, he's going to be back for a lot more spare parts than a motocross guy is. That's for sure. It's always breaking things. What about do you still have, you know, like, you've been in this sport for a while, do you still have like future goals, things that you'd like to tick off and that sort of thing? Or I reckon you probably achieved a lot of the things that you really wanted to do. But
yeah, exactly. But so yeah, I've just kind of stepped away from the factory ride a little bit, so kind of creating my own team, you know, any riders that want to come over. Base in Europe, I've got the setup for them, and then getting the signature tours up and running. You know, they're up and running, but you know, building on that, I do the tours in Spain, Panama, so that's kind of like a franchise system which has never kind of been created before. You know, there's lots of tours around the world, but yeah, you know, putting my name to different countries, the best places to ride in the world, which, you know, becomes, I think it's cool for me to do anyway, but you know, basically giving people the chance to ride different places in the world, knowing they're going to get a good tour with, you know, good bikes and options to do the hard stuff if they want, but easy as well.
Yeah, so you on those tours, you provide bikes and provide, you know, tour leaders and all that sort of thing. Is that sort of how it works? So someone could fly in, pay for a package and jump on the bike and head off, sort of. Yeah, that's all inclusive.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of,
they can travel right around the world, knowing they're going to get a good bike and good guides and, you know, some decent soft mousses and stuff, so they can try some gnarly stuff and, or, you know, just complete variation, but just tours for everybody. Give them the opportunity to do what I've been doing, travel the world, ride bikes.
Yeah, cool. How many tours do you go to yourself? Do you get to a fair few? I'm guessing this.
I go to these locations we got set up, and then obviously doing the schools as well, which is kind of a separate thing. Did most of Australia last year, which was cool. And then just going new places as well. I just love it, just exploring and, you know, hopefully promoting the sport as well, teaching people new skills, inspiring the old guys to, they can still ride.
That's funny. That's a good segue into another thing I was going to say. My wife, I think hard enduro helps get some new audience in, because my wife's not interested in motocross, any other sort of racing that I watch or whatever. She's just sort of like, doesn't care, but she loves watching hard enduro. It's just like, because, you know, she's just, you know, I suppose she's seen so many bikes fly through the air, she's just like, oh yeah, you know, whatever. But the hard enduro stuff, she's just like, wow. And she got watching Erzberg with me, you know, years ago. And she won't watch the whole thing, but she always wants to know what's going on, and she'll sit in. And it's funny there. One time, one of your wins, she was like, oh wow, the old guy won. And I looked at her and I was like, he's the same age as me. What are you talking about? I said, he's not old. He's my age, because, yeah, I'm 48. And I was like, you know, he's out there, you know, giving, you're giving me guys like me hope that, you know, we can still put it to the young blood. I mean, I can't because I don't have skill, but that's it. So she'd say, "Oh, the old guy won." I said, "No, it's not the old guy. It's Graham Jarvis."
Obviously, it doesn't get easier getting older, but we can still, if we keep going, we can still achieve a lot.
Tell us a bit about obviously you keep super fit. But tell us a bit about how you keep fit. What's your fitness, regime?
Yeah, obviously riding the bike's one thing, but just aches and pains become more of an issue. So, keeping on top of them, just keeping the joints strong and healthy as well. So some of the smaller type exercises, the stability, the joints and stuff, back pain and knee pain and all the rest of it becomes more important. It's important anyway, but and then in the gym, weights, because it's all round fitness, that's the key. But you need the strength, you're picking the bike, moving the bike, but you got to go for 6-7 hours sometimes. So just a complete mix, but the key is if I can stay in one place long enough to do some proper training. I've been doing a lot of traveling the last year, but hopefully
so you're always looking for a gym.
Yeah, that's it. So it's not easy as easy when you're traveling. It's not an excuse, but hopefully this year I can put a bit more hours in some proper training.
I guess, as anyone that travels at all knows, it's hard to eat healthy when you're traveling too, find healthy food at airports and find healthy food when you're on the go and all that. That's always a struggle for any athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And, everyone else is getting fitter as well. They're obviously younger, but they're working so hard on the fitness as well and improving the bike. So you've got to got to work doubly hard to keep up to some extent.
Yeah. Would you say that particularly Manny and Billy have seemed to have elevated the sport in the last few years? Friendly rivalry too has sort of just elevated, and everybody else, has had to up their game to keep up with those two.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know what proportion I've gone down and they've gone up, but it's probably a bit of a mix. They've upped their level. Yeah, the level's just, they're consistent. Obviously Manny won every race, so, and they're getting mentally stronger as well every year probably. So, but we got to keep going. We've got to keep trying.
That's it. Yeah, you got to knock these young blokes off at some stage this year. So. And how's your fitting well for the things upcoming this year?
Yeah, not too bad. Like I had the knee injury, it was 2.5 years ago, but takes time to recover from. And I had a shoulder problem as well last year, so the ligaments are still need surgery. But with a lot of strengthening, I can get by. But no excuses.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no excuses. That's it. Yeah. Do you get people on your tours and that? Do you get, I'm sure you get the odd bloke that just really, he's bitten off more than he can chew and he's really struggling and that sort of thing. How do you go with guys like that? Like, even I've been on rides it's not even a quarter of the level of what you're doing, but you get someone come along who's just not realized what they're in for and they might have a bit of a meltdown, or I can't do this and all that sort of thing. There's got to be a bit of that on your tours.
Yeah, that's the key with the tours, that there's so many different levels that to be able to adapt, and that's what we focus on all the time. And I always say everything's optional, so then I'm not so responsible if they crash. But if they want to challenge themselves, the key is to if they want to challenge, just push their level, whatever it is, so you're riding safely. But some people are more ambitious than others. But the key with running tours, we put a lot of effort into finding the different options, different routes, because levels of fitness vary, skill levels vary, so keeping everybody appropriately challenged is the key.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. I think people would, you know, if you do challenge them a bit and they succeed with your help, you know, that's probably their bit. That'd be their greatest memory out of the tour, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
And I didn't think I could do it, and I did, you know.
Yeah, sometimes it's just confidence as well, you know, that if it's downhills or particularly some of the bigger stuff, it's more confidence, but you just sometimes you just say one or two key points and it kind of clicks and they just you can see the transition, the improvement, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be really cool for you too. It'd be pretty that'd be one of the more rewarding things of doing those tours when you.
Yeah, that's it. They learn a new skill or they overcome some fears. It's pretty cool and get the all round experience is the key.
Yeah. Do you find, have you ever done tours where, I'm sure you have, where people bring their own bikes and maybe their bike's not set up, you know, well and that sort of thing? Have you come across that where it's just like, you know, mate, you, this is not the right bike to be doing this on? And you know,
yeah,
I guess how much does the right bike matter in hard enduro?
Yeah, I think you know, the worst thing is if they don't realize that the soft tires and mousses and tire pressures make the difference. That probably makes the biggest difference. But obviously you can let if they've got air, you can let the pressure down, but you know, and then just that really. And then, you know, if the gearing is too high, or obviously if they come on a motocross bike, it can be tricky. It's not set up for the job as such.
Yeah.
But the tours, we supply the bikes, so we get them all set up good. But, yeah, you know, the schools, when I do the training school, sometimes it's training and then we go for a little ride and stuff. So, but quite often, you know, they try my bike or whatever, or if they're on, and then they realize that the bike can make quite a bit of difference. But yeah, but mostly just basic stuff, the gearing, tire pressures, mousses, stuff like that.
Yeah. I know. I took my motocross bike to an event that last year that was supposed to just be an enduro, but it turned out to be, it was run by a hard enduro club. Yeah. And it had a lot of their hard enduro sections in it, that sort of thing. That wasn't good fun, so for sure. Yeah. But that's mostly, yeah, that's 75% my skill, 25% being on a motocross bike, you know. So
yeah,
not just blaming the bike, but I was wishing I had some of their bikes though a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But I think like people coming in, you know, if they just understand the basic skills of the clutch and the gas and pressure in the tire, you know, they just enjoy the sport a whole lot more. People transitioning over, they're a little bit scared, they don't understand. It's definitely more fun once you've got them just the basic skills. So just explaining that to people, you can see that they just start enjoying it more. It's ride safer as well is the first thing, just to ride safe.
Yeah. It's amazing, man. You know, like over, you know, the last 10, 15 years, it's the same in motocross, but in the off-road stuff, the skills of kids, man, it's unbelievable. Like I've seen groups of kids that are 12, 13, just doing slow wheelies to a stop. And yes, taken off just in the car park, you know, before their race. And I've taken photos of them and that sort of thing. It's just like, wow, you know, 15 years ago, there was like few people in the world were doing this. And we were just like, oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's
kids are doing it. Yeah.
It's good to see the future of the sport, you know, the young kids riding, getting into it. But yeah, the race though, it's, you know, it's older, generally the older generation, because it's obviously expensive sport. But
yeah.
Hopefully we can achieve, the sport needs to be a little bit cheaper and more accessible in some places. But
yeah. What do you reckon is what's the hardest race you've ever done? The hardest single event?
Yeah, it's difficult to say because, you know, they're difficult in different ways. Erzberg, yeah, obviously, it's intense, one day, the main race. So yeah, that's just, middle of the rocks at Carl's Diner. Just you can real pushing the limits basically. But then you got Romaniacs 4 days, 6, 7 hours a day. So it's a different type of fatigue. It's accumulation of the all the so many hours.
Yeah.
It's more of a mental thing. So, but yeah, I think it's more if you go in and if I'm not prepared, physically, that's when it becomes the toughest race. And one time I dehydrated as well, and then it's hard to just do anything. In
Yeah. Did you have
also
like
that's.
a problem with like your pack, your hydration pack or something, or you just
Yeah, it was Roof of Africa, so you don't get a Romania actually get 20 minutes to refill. So there you have to take the it's race time when you fill in to fill your pack, fill your bike. But you think you can make it to the next stop, but then it's just so far and you just run out if you don't fill the pack up, take the time, your race time to fill it up. And then it's easy to make that mistake.
The
And then sometimes
dehydrate.
it's just so long anyway, you could easily run out 3 liters in a couple of hours, you could drink that.
Cool. Who do you reckon is your biggest rival over your hard enduro career?
Yeah, obviously Johnny for a few years, but he's kind of stepped away from the championship, so. But now there's everybody.
Everybody,
Yeah,
yeah,
so
seems to
just
be a real good a lot of camaraderie in hard enduro though. Like it seems like everybody, see, it's like a whole field of just like good guys, and everyone's just a good guy and mates and all that sort of thing. I'm sure this, that doesn't affect how competitive you are, but you just seem like a just a cool bunch, I guess. Yeah, I think the more,
That's it. Everyone's chilled, and sometimes we have to team up in the race to help each other as well. And quite often, you kind of ride in Romaniacs when it's navigation races like that. You kind of ride together and kind of work together sometimes because you miss a turn in, and then some a little bit lost. You work together to find your way around, find the best line.
We've seen that, a lot of times at Erzberg, people, helping each other out and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's it.
It's a cool part of the sport, I think. Yeah. And there's
Yeah.
obviously the famous one where four of you helped each other get up the hill to win it in a four-way tie. That was and geez, I mean, that was Manny's dad. So, that's amazing, isn't it? He's a real second generation, he grew up following dad doing it. So it's no wonder that Manny's on top of his game. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. I gotta know, did you get a new shed? Have you got a new shed after your
Yeah,
failure?
never got a new shed.
Oh, really? Geez, that's rough.
Yeah, I was
That's rough.
expecting some sponsorship to come in for a new shed, but it never happened.
Jeez. Yeah, that it. You're married, Graham?
It was my partner's house, and
Yeah.
which she was all cool about it. It was all for a
Yeah.
good cause, all in the
In the
spirit of
name of the fun.
entertainment.
Yeah.
You've
Well, yeah,
been.
that's right. When there wasn't much racing to watch during lockdown, because as you know, Australia was locked down real hard, like England. And it was funny watching that. Yeah. Few
It kept me occupied.
pavers to fix, few pavers to fix in that as well. And so,
It kept me occupied, gave me something to get up for, something to do.
yeah.
Some things took a while to kind of prep it and build it. But it just started with just like just bouncing the front wheel, like one video, and then people liked it. So it just kind of spiraled from there. Every day I had to think of something different. But
Yeah.
yeah, it was good fun. And got me a
What's
lot more
your
followers.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. I had some mates who probably ne had never watched hard enduro that were sharing your shared videos and that sort of thing. I was like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's Graham Jarvis. Like, yeah, I know Graham Jarvis is, you know. So, but no, that's cool. What's your, so for someone that's listening or watching this, you know, what's just maybe just three simple tips to get better as an off-road rider?
Yeah, the main thing is the clutch controls. So a lot of the in when you're riding slower, you're controlling a lot of the power with a clutch. So a lot of it's, you know, people think, you know, this is the main control of the power of the throttle, but you know, that clutch control, riding slow, and then thinking that pressuring the tire, different ways to pressure the tire for grip. So quite often it's less gas, but as long as the tire's pressured into the ground, which there's different ways to do, and then you're going to find grip. So once you understand them 2 points, you can progress really quickly.
Okay, yeah. The tire one's interesting, for sure. Yeah, like I definitely expected you to talk about the clutch, but yeah, the tire one. Does that come back to just like where you're weighting, where you're putting your weight on the bike and that sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly. You know? So there's, you know, when you're in, sometimes when you're stuck, when you know, people can spend a lot of energy when they get stuck, but you know, if you've got one foot on the footrest and you're pushing on that footrest and you lean back, it pushes the tire in for grip. So
yeah,
and then you're controlling, you know, people think going uphill, you've got to get your weight forwards, but sometimes you can get your weight back and you control the front with the clutch.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
That makes good sense. Yeah. Cool. Slow wheelies, man. So I'm hopeless, man. I've been trying to do slow wheelies since I reckon, since I was a kid, since I reckon I saw Doug DeMocos videos, I've been trying to do slow wheelies, yeah, right? So I still can't do it. A couple of years ago, I decided I'd given up and I was never going to be able to do it because I was out practicing doing it and I ended up somehow crashing and taking a freshly sharpened foot peg to the stomach. And I was just like, that's it. I'm done with slow wheelies. What's your best tips on slow wheelies, man? For, you know, because if you gave me a tip and I was able to do even a slow wheelie for even like 15 feet, that would be one of your biggest achievements because I'm that hopeless. Like,
yeah, you need to come on a Jarvis school for that. Sorry, you can't give this information for free.
No, that's fair enough.
The key again is the clutch. And then just thinking that, you know, again, it's not the gas that's gonna, you know, a little bit of gas, but you know, can't rely on power in it unless you want to go your fast wheelie. But the key is to first, you've got to pressure down with the forks and catch the rebound coming back up. And then that's with the legs. So you can do that with the brakes as well. So if you brake, obviously it pressures down and then you transition to clutch. And if you just get that timing, the front can come up so easily. So there's ways you can learn that, you know, like demonstrate with bouncing the front with the engine off and then get people just to get the pressure down with the brakes and flex the legs at the same time is the first step. And then when you've got that timing, pressuring down, transition to clutch, and then you go for the wheelie and use a bit of a slope to practice because it's a little bit easier to control.
Easier uphill, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then build the confidence from there.
Yeah, yeah. I might have to get back to practice. And I end up falling off the back most of the time. That's usually my problem.
Well, the rear brake can save you when it goes too far. But that's just being too aggressive. If you're too aggressive, clutching out too much, you don't need to clutch out. You can get into trouble.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe the dream's still alive. I might have to try again. Yeah. Hey, it always interests me when some of the guys. I'm trying to think. I think is it Paul who's done some hard enduro on 700 on the Tenere 700, and is it Kevin on the old Honda XL?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like. That's amazing, man. Like, that's got to be so tough. Like, how How do you reckon you'd go if you jumped on one of those bikes? Like,
yeah, that's it. I mean, I can't say it's much fun with that much weight, but it's a good achievement to get to the finish of the, like, the bronze. He finished, didn't he? But
yeah,
I don't know. I think, yeah, obviously made the bike a little bit lighter than standard, but
yeah,
yeah, maybe one day I'll give it a go.
That'd certainly get you. That'll get you a lot of followers, I reckon, because I know the videos of, especially the videos of Kevin Gallus, isn't it? Kevin Gallus, who was on the old XL185, you know, like, and he's got some better forks on it and some better shocks on it, that sort of thing, but it's not that much else, you know. And the things he was, especially the things he's going up, because like I've had one of those bikes before. And yeah, there's not a lot of power there, so that really shows the skills, man. Yeah, like the it'd be funny to see jump on something like that.
Do some more videos on random bikes, could be cool.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. Towards the end of the show, man, I ask a few just random questions just to get to know a little bit about you. What other interests do you have? So is it all just enduro, or do you have other interests things that you're into?
Yeah, not too much time, but I got a little buggy here in Spain. I drive that. Something I'd like to get into. Well, I enjoy it, you know, just for fun. And then other than that, not a lot.
Close to the beach. Oh yeah. What sort of buggy is it?
It's called a Rage Buggy. It's like a 1000cc Honda Fireblade engine. So it's got the gears, the shifter on near the steering wheel. And then, yeah, it's pretty far. Rear wheel drive, so sliding around all over the place. But yeah, I've had a couple of crashes. Yeah, I've got a house here. That's where we base the tours. And I've got some land around the house. So pretty lucky. And weather's good all year round. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Lucky
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, yeah. Got out of rainy England, huh?
Yeah, that's it. And the riding's a lot better here. You don't have to wash the bikes often. Yeah, it's just becoming more restricted in England, but it's pretty good in Spain still. A lot of trails. Yeah. Joins straight to the trails from my house, so a lot easier to get motivated to ride.
Yeah.
New stuff, finding new stuff, exploring all the time.
Yeah. Do you have kids or pets or anything? Yep, you know?
Yeah, I've got two kids. So they're 19 now, so grown-ups. We got dogs here that we've got stray dogs in here in Spain. They come kind of just turn up sometimes.
Okay, yeah, that's all right. And you do your kids ride?
Yeah, my daughter started to ride a little bit, and my son's into football, so not too much.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And what skills don't you have that you'd love to have?
Yeah, I wish my motocross skills were a bit better, doing jumps and stuff. But I don't really practice. Kind of get scared.
It's funny. It's all what people are used to, isn't it? You know, like
that's it. I do what I need to do on the jumps.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm sure you'd be very good at that if you spend a short amount of time at it as well. Yeah, that'd be cool to see Grimbo doing some jumps. Yeah, where did the nickname Grimbo come from? I only know that from, Bolts calling you that during Erzberg coverage.
Yeah, it goes back a lot of years from when I was even more grim than I am now.
So it's just a name your mates gave you years ago.
Yeah, that's it, because I was so grim.
So because you were so grim. You don't seem that grim, man. You've been smiling most of the time I've been talking to you, so you don't seem that grim. Maybe you were when you were younger.
Yeah, that's it. I was a little bit more serious back then.
A little bit more serious back in the trials days.
Yeah, that's it.
And a question I often ask, this is just a funny one. So if Mrs. Jarvis gave you the okay, who would be your celebrity hall pass?
How do you mean? Explain.
Oh, so yeah, so who's just like your celebrity crush? So, you know, if Mrs. Jarvis said, yeah, if you got one shot, who's your celebrity crush?
I don't know. Can't answer that.
You haven't thought of that. You haven't thought of that, or you don't want to get in trouble with Mrs. Jarvis.
That's it. Better to play safe on that type of stuff.
No, I can understand that. I can understand that. That's for sure, man. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, thank you heaps for joining us. Couple of little things I do to close out the show. Or before I do, man, is there anything you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about or covered or anything? Or anything you want to plug, like upcoming tours or anything at all?
We're always keen to plug the tours. We've got Bali, we're setting up there, so it's probably handy for you guys in Australia. It's a cool place to ride. We want to set them up in Australia as well, you know, get people there from other countries.
Whereabouts in Australia would you set up?
I don't know. I've obviously traveled right around, but you've just got good riding everywhere, haven't you? And
there's good riding all. So basically, Australia has like a mountain range that runs right down the east coast, and that's all good. But then, once you get west of there, then it's just, you know, desert for days. You know, there's good spots, but a lot of the country there's nothing but desert. But yeah, where there's good spots, there is pretty good spots. Yeah, like the New South Wales High Country, the Victorian High Country, where I've done most of my trail riding and that sort of thing. Yeah, there's some good spots. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm gonna start doing adventure bike tours as well, the bigger bikes. And
we were up
in Darwin, but it didn't really work there as such. So, but Australia's a big place. You've got a lot of stuff to see. And there's always mix of, you know, seeing the country as well. Whatever cool trail, doesn't have to be hard enduro. If it's a cool experience, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely plenty of that here. Yeah. There's definitely plenty of just cool things to see and like. You know, I like the desert areas. To me, they've got their own sort of beauty. When you sort of sit back and look, like sometimes you just think, oh, you know, this is pretty boring here. But then you sit back and look and you think it is actually pretty cool. But I still love traveling south to the mountains. And, you know, like I only get to ride up or downhill, you know, a couple of times a year. So I'm always real keen when I actually get somewhere where there's uphills and downhills, you know. That's always a good time.
In Europe, if you ever want to come, or anybody wants to come Europe, we do the race support as well. So we do, I'm in Spain with the tours, but we take the bikes to the Romaniacs and Erzberg if people want to try that. Obviously, it's difficult to get organized coming from the other side of the world, but anybody help with that? Or any young riders want to come join the team based in Spain?
Yeah, and what do they do? They just hit you up on the website or?
Yeah, just contact us on the website or on the social media or whatever, and then it can be for a few months if they want to base here or just do the races. It can be a mix. We can adapt.
That's a good opportunity for young people to be able to go and learn from one of the greatest.
Right. Yeah, I know you've got some young, talented riders out there. Everybody's getting better. So be nice to see, you know, some Australians making it to the top.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've had some super talent come through Australia in off-road, but they've all tended to lead towards desert, you know, Dakar sort of stuff and desert stuff. And, you know, I always thought... that Daniel Sanders, his skills could have led him towards getting into hard enduro. You know, he's very, very good at that sort of stuff. But, he's now, you know, riding Dakar rally bikes and all that sort of thing. He's the sort of guy that can do put his hand to sort of anything. But, yeah, I guess sometimes for these young blokes, you know, sometimes it's where the money is too, you know, like really good money in rally racing if they're good at it, I guess, you know, probably or maybe compared to the hard enduro, I don't know. But that's, like you said, as this hard enduro is just going to keep on growing, isn't it? Keep on growing with, you know, like I said, with these kids doing slow wheelies in the car park, you know, it's just like.
It's going to keep growing.
What about for kids? Like, would you suggest for kids to do a bit of trials riding and that sort of thing when they're young?
Yeah, definitely. When you're getting started in the sport, it's just safer. You know, you learn all the clutch and the gas and all the rest of it. So it's just, it's just safer way to start, I think, for kids. And then you can, you know, mix it up, do both if you can afford both bikes. It just sets you up or the skills better.
That one thing I know, I was looking into maybe buying a trials bike myself just for a bit of fun at one stage, and I was talking to a guy that's into it, and he said one thing about trials bikes is trials is actually pretty easy on the bike. So, you know, like, he said, you know, he rides it all the time and never has to replace much because he's, you know, just, he's not being, unless he crashes, he's not being too hard on the bike. So
That's it. The parts are cheaper, the bike's cheaper as well. So it's just a better, you know, you get a second hand one, used one, if you want to commit with the money as well. Mm. You can still learn the skills no matter what bike it is. So it's just a good way to start.
Yeah, I've even heard some like motocross guys putting their kids on trials bikes when they're really little, you know, like when they're just off striders and that, putting them on those little Iset trials bikes, little electric ones or whatever, and that sort of thing, just to learn the skills. And that goes back to, I remember stories of dads taking the seat off off kids' bikes because it's like, hey, you got to learn to stand up all the time, boy, so they just unbolt the seat, you know. Things like that. So it's with the little trials bikes, they don't have to do that. Cool. Very, very good. All right. So one thing I always ask guests to do that aren't Aussies is give me your best Aussie accent.
G'day, mate. Put another shrimp on the barry.
That was good, man. It was good. I think I'm just trying to think if you're the first Englishman I've had on. I don't think so, but yeah, but that was good. I'm not surprised an Englishman was good. It's funny when the American guys come on, probably most of my guests are Americans, and they always actually sound a bit English usually when they try and sound Australian. But you were good,
Sometimes the Americans think I'm Australian. They can't tell the difference.
I know. I've had one of my American mates. He reckoned that English, Australians, New Zealanders and South Africans all sounded the same. so different. But all very different to American accent too. So yeah, that's a funny one, man. All right. Thank you very much for coming on. What I sing a bit of Kenny Rogers for the outtake, man, and I always say to people, most people aren't into it, but if anybody wants to join in, they're always welcome to join in when I do the Kenny Rogers outtake. So I'll just rip into a bit of that. So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light, and the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, if you're going to play the game, boy, you got to learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Thank you very much, Grimbo. Thanks for coming on the show. And I hope to meet you in person one day and cheer you on at an event. Erzberg is definitely one that's on my bucket list to go and go and watch and check out the beer hall and all those sort of things. It looks like a real good time. So
get over. We'll see you there.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Take it easy.
No, it's cheers. Bye.